Fuck the Universe, written by Schwanenkönigin and read by Wilfriede 0815. Fandom, Hex, relationship, Ava Daniels / Deborah Vance. Rating, teen and up audiences. No archive warnings apply. Additional tags, alternate universe, soulmates, soulmate identifying marks, POV Deborah Vance. Summary. A soulmate AU where everything your soulmate writes onto their skin shows up on yours too. Deborah spends a good part of her early life trying to find her soulmate. Not because she thinks it's necessary, never that. It's simply that she isn't immune to all the promises. And there are a lot of them, everywhere, at all times, all around her. She hears things like, they will make your life so much better, or they will bring you peace. So, yes, she, too, spends many mornings sitting at home, drawing onto her forearm, her hands, her thighs. Sometimes she even writes in multiple colors. Still, it leads nowhere. None of her questions, who are you? Where do you live? Or simply, are you well? Ever receives an answer. And so, after 15 years of trying, of listening to stupid-ass propaganda about things that clearly don't exist, after 15 years of lies, nothing but lies, from everyone, including her own parents, she swears to herself that she will never think about the concept of soulmates ever again. It's dumb. It's false. It's not a reality. People are just delusional. Frank is not her soulmate. Deborah is, obviously, aware of this fact. He's a pleasant person to be around, and rather thoughtful, and she knows that he would have answered one of the many pleas she had sent as a young child. He is a good man. He may not be what she's heard others described as true love, but he is good. Great, even. The fact that he's not it doesn't bother her. She has adapted to what is a simple fact of life, and she settles down with him. They live together. They even get married. She doesn't make a big deal out of it, because she loves Frank. It's not the kind of love that has her feeling like fireworks are exploding within her, or like there's electricity rushing through her system whenever he kisses her, but it works. Because he makes her funnier. His sense of humor is exactly what she needs, and they make it work. For a while. And then her sister. Her fucking sister, of all people. The one who used to make fun of soulmates just to help her feel better, takes him. As if the universe didn't screw up enough already by not giving her a soulmate, it's now going to continue making her suffer, by giving Kathy to him. Deborah's going to constantly be reminded of how much they have in common, how they belong together, how much they love each other. Day in, day out, she tries to convince herself that it's fine, that it makes sense. They're soulmates. It was inevitable. It has always been meant to be. Blah, blah, blah. Well, it's fucking bullshit. Deborah had something so good. She and Frank had something great. And now he, the asshole, has something even greater, while Deborah is, in a word, fucked. She's alone, without a late-night show to boot, and she's going to have to go through the rest of her fucking life as a single mother, without a soulmate by her side. She's given up entirely on that now. Where there used to be a glimmer of hope shining in the very depths of her mind, there is only darkness. She's 38. Nothing is going to happen. She won't find anyone. There is nobody out there who was made for her. She's one of the unlucky ones. It's as simple as that. She's one of those who are born without a soulmate, who live without a soulmate, who die without a soulmate. And it fucking crushes her. The weight of it. She can pretend all she wants that she doesn't care at all, but it is a part of the world that she lives in, and she can only deny it for so long. And it fucking sucks that she had something so goddamn great that she was ready to accept her fate because she thought she'd have someone despite it all, someone who'd get her through it all. And now she doesn't, and she won't ever again. It crushes her, and sometimes she cries. Sometimes she sets aside a moment to mourn what could have, no, what should have been, and she cries. But she goes on. She has to. She puts her energy into stand-up, and she absolutely kills. Every single night, she kills. The audience loves her. The critics adore her. Everyone who comes to see her tells her how inspiring she is, how impressive her set is. The newspapers start calling her the goddess of comedy. And, well, that she will take. At least this, stand-up, is a reality. Not just an unachievable dream somewhere in the back of her mind, a non-reality like the whole soulmate business. Still, sometimes, the memory of what happened will pull itself out from under the rubble inside of her subconscious, will spring out right to the forefront of her mind, and there, it will build itself a home, if only for a few minutes at a time. And it will plague her, haunt her, laugh at her. It will mock her and scream at her, and eventually it will make her wish, just for a tiny moment, that she could just go out there and burn their fucking house down. And it will make her believe they deserve it. They don't, of course. They're victims to the universe's shenanigans, much like she is. Everyone in the world is a prisoner of fate, and it's nobody's fault. Not Frank's or Kathy's, and certainly not Deborah's. Just fucking... Later, she will wish that she hadn't ever even thought it, no matter what kind of horribly negative emotions she had let take over at the time. Because, fuck, the house really does burn down. And now she's got to add guilt to her ever-growing list of things to discuss with no one ever. So, yeah, later she will regret it. But for now, the rush of energy that she gets whenever she imagines her sister and Frank fucking disappearing off of the face of the earth is enough to get her going. And she continues fucking killing it on stage. Clearly, it's the rage that makes her set better. And fuck, she's got a lot of that. She concentrates it, bottles it up all day, then lets it out on stage. It's explosive, the way she puts ounce after ounce of it into her jokes, and the roar of laughter she gets at the end of the night, every night, makes her feel like she really is the goddess the newspapers have labeled her as. Just fuck Frank and fuck Kathy. Fuck them. The absolute nerve of them to try and reconcile. Deborah promises to herself to never answer phone calls, or letters, or whatever the fuck else the two of them send. And anyway, who does care about them? They only have each other. She has Marcus, Josefina, and a whole bunch of other people who worship the ground that she walks on, who will roll out the red carpet if she so much as breathes in their direction. She is a goddess, damn it. And she kills. She kills and kills and continues killing night after night after night. Not Frank or Kathy, unfortunately, but it's enough. Deborah wakes up one day, July 28, 1995, though she will never admit to anyone that she remembers the date, feeling the oddest of sensations. Her heart is beating unbelievably fast, and her head, God, her head, it's pounding, and everything is all cloudy, all messed up, and just everything is blurry, all around her, as if the world were disappearing right before her very eyes. She briefly wonders whether she might be suffering a heart attack. It's a fleeting thought, though, one she disregards as quickly as it comes to her. She decides to ignore whatever is happening to her body instead, and puts the feeling down to her recently finalized, at fucking last, divorce. The anger must have manifested itself in physical symptoms. She's still furious, that's all. And no, she will not speak to a therapist, thank you very much. Otherwise, she will simply end up hating yet another man. Or, well, in couples therapy. And yeah, Deborah ignores the strange feeling. She ignores it, life goes back to normal. Or maybe she gets used to the weirdness, who knows. As far as she's concerned, she's back to how she was before July 28, and it's all good. Until it isn't. 2 years later, she wakes up, unaware that another fateful day awaits. She brushes her teeth first, as usual, then her hair. She goes through every single part of her daily routine. Everything's the same as it always is. That is, until she finally takes off her nightgown to apply moisturizer to her arms. That's when she stops dead in her tracks. It's when she sees it, the scribbling on her forearm. Deborah's mind starts reeling, and she immediately wonders what the fuck she could have possibly been doing the night before. But even despite her drunken state, she knows she did not take anybody home. She's alone. And it's not some stranger's phone number either, she's certain. It doesn't look much like, well, Anything, really. But especially not numbers. She doesn't nap with, read on top of, her notebook anymore either, and she most definitely doesn't let herself fall asleep at tables or vanities or other surfaces that come with objects that could potentially ruin her perfect skin. It isn't pen or marker on her arm. It isn't makeup. It isn't anything. It's not even been written by an adult, from the looks of it. It's awful, horrendous, and Deborah wants to yell out in frustration. Because it won't come off, no matter what she uses. No matter how hard she scrubs, no matter what she does, instead of getting rid of the ink, she just ends up scraping off several layers of skin. It's fucked up, is what it is. And it just becomes gradually more fucked up as she sits down on a stool by the kitchen island, watching more scribbles appear. They just keep coming. And she watches as it happens, with her jaw almost on the floor. And she watches as more letters, numbers, and little drawings flow in. She watches as they settle. She watches as they stay. Right there, on her forearm. And she almost fucking faints. She does not wear short sleeves anymore. Never, never, never. Absolutely no way. It's only ever long dresses for her these days. Long dresses with long sleeves. It's not because she's worried people will be able to tell that she's aging. She fucking owns her age. It's not that. It isn't that at all. Everything has to be covered up for an entirely different reason. She cannot possibly, she could not ever possibly have anyone see her tattoos. The ones that she gets overnight. Or during the day. The ones that still, after many, many months, appear in the most infuriatingly inconvenient spots at random. Just never. Nobody can find out that her soulmate has clearly only just been born. That her soulmate is 3 fucking years old, learning to write, to paint, to calculate, all at once, for fuck's sake. Just focus on one thing at a time, she wants to scream, with themselves as a canvas. No. No, no, no. Men might get away with dating 20-somethings at 70, but she will not be made fun of. She has fought too hard. She has been through too much to have this fucking annoyance ruin her life. No. Deborah will be prepared every damn night. She will wear the most dazzlingly beautiful dresses ever designed, and she will kill every single time she steps onto that stage. Her stage. Eventually, the little shit will grow out of their face, and they'll stop doing this to their, and her, arms. And she'll finally be able to stop wearing long sleeves. At 65, she's still wearing long sleeves. Fuck Frank, fuck Kathy, and especially fuck the universe. Whatever her soulmate did in their childhood, they seem to have grown into it rather than out of it. Which, honestly, what the fuck? How is it that, in 20 or however many years, the scribbling has gotten worse? Deborah cannot believe it. She doesn't think about it most days, but then something utterly ridiculous will show up on her wrist, on her hand, and... Jesus Christ! Somehow, she's ended up with the worst soulmate imaginable. It's bad enough that this person was in diapers when she herself had just turned 40, but it does not end there. No! Deborah has also ended up with someone who... And this, Deborah is convinced of now that she has asked Google 100 times, has the most severe case of ADHD she's ever witnessed. Not that she's ever witnessed ADHD in anyone. No, this little shit, her soulmate, is the only one in her life who's like this. And they're not even in it. Suffice it to say that she's given herself way too many migraines in trying to wrap her head around the whole thing. Good fucking lord. This girl. This fucking girl. She's infuriating. And that's the conclusion that Deborah has come to before she has even started talking. But oh boy, does she talk. And when she does, Jesus Christ, she's so much worse than when she doesn't. She's entitled, for starters. And she's a comedy writer, somehow, even though she's not funny. She's not funny at all, and Christ, she's annoying as all hell. She is, in a word, infuriating. Which is precisely what Deborah predicted. And those fucking boots? She doesn't even have the vocabulary to describe them. They're some of the worst pieces of footwear she's ever seen in her life, and she's seen a lot. So that's telling. Really, really telling. Which is why Deborah is going to kick her the fuck out. She will be damned if she lets this wannabe jokester ruin her $50,000 carpet. She never wants to see this little shit ever again. Or, God forbid, the boots. She's about to say the words. She swears she is. She's going to say them. But she doesn't. She never gets to. No. Instead, she chokes on her fucking Diet Coke. Because this fucking asshole sitting across from her, who has the audacity to demand a job after staining her carpet and her couch and her table and has no sense of anything, least of all humor, rolls up her sleeves and... Deborah chokes and sputters and goes beet red. Oh, she's fucking fuming now. Because this cannot possibly be reality. The universe absolutely fucking hates her. It hates her, plain and simple. It's still punishing her for those house-burning thoughts 30 years ago. There is no other explanation for the stupid goddamn packing list on the asshole's arm, the same one that had appeared on her arm the night before. Exact same annoying shade of red and all. Just no. She's had it with the universe. This isn't happening. It's not going to happen. Deborah is going to kick her, she didn't bother learning the asshole's name, out of her house, off of her grounds, and out of her fucking life. Except not. Ava Daniels is her soulmate. It's fucking annoying, actually. It really, truly is. Because the universe, which, as it turns out, has a very wicked, very unique, very fucked up sense of humor, makes it clear that it won't have Deborah getting rid of her, no matter how hard she tries. Instead, the sheer need to somehow keep the damn Zillennial in her life is stronger, 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 stronger than so many other things. It's so overwhelming, in fact, that she doesn't just chase after her to correct her mediocre, at best, joke and offer her a job that first day. No, she also forgives her for being constantly late. Deborah cannot even seem to bring herself to hate the little shit. But God, she wants to. Desperately. Jesus Christ, does she want to. And she hates herself for not hating Ava. This girl who waltzes into her life, who's got everything figured out, who knows what she wants and how to make it happen. Indeed, Deborah wants to hate Ava. For the way she behaves, annoyingly, and dresses, awfully, and speaks, too much. And shares details of her life Deborah would never even think of inquiring about. It's just that she can't. She can't hate Ava Daniels because, and once again, what the actual fuck, the girl is her stupid fucking soulmate. She wishes she could hate her, at the very least, for writing nothing of substance for months on end. But that, too, she lets her get away with. Everyone has a learning curve, that's what she tells herself. And in the end, Deborah even forgives her for writing an all-too-revealing email that could have potentially, and should have, quite frankly, ended her career before she reached 109. But no. And fuck, she knows exactly why she forgives her for something that deserves her wrath, more so than Frank's leaving her for Kathy ever did. Deborah knows why she let something that should have career-ending consequences for at least one, if not both, of them go. It's because of the way Ava had looked at her after she'd slept her. The way she'd looked into Deborah's eyes and the way she had shaken her head. The way she had pointedly looked at her now exposed arm and said, "Who the fuck slaps their soulmate?" Deborah realizes, later, that she brought the email on herself. And that's precisely why she doesn't just forgive this time. It's why she forgets, too. The worst thing, truly, is that Ava, 25-year-old Ava, who wears terribly unflattering clothes, who annoys Deborah every single second of every day still, does a pretty damn great job at being her soulmate. It's the worst thing, because Deborah never expected it. She never, ever expected it. And she doesn't like unexpected, because it brings about heartbreak and tears and is fucked up all around. Just, in this particular case, it doesn't feel the same. It doesn't feel like the wrong kind of unexpected. It feels right. So, yeah, it might be the worst thing ever, because Deborah isn't involved in the decision, but at the same time, it might just be the best thing, too. Being a soulmate just seems to come naturally to Ava. And that, honestly, means so much more than Deborah could ever express in words. Somewhere out there, the universe is making fun of her for thinking that way. Of course her soulmate would do a good job at being her soulmate, considering that it is, in fact, quite literally their job. To make her smile, to make her happy. It's a good thing that Deborah decided long ago that the universe can go fuck itself. And so she doesn't have to worry about this. Ava is Ava. She's so very Ava. Ava makes Deborah laugh harder and more impulsively than she ever thought possible. Before her, laughter was scheduled. It was a necessity to get what she wanted. Nothing used to ever warrant a real laugh. Nobody she knows is that funny. But these days, it just happens. Ava says something absolutely ridiculous, and Deborah cackles. And Christ, they're full-on witch cackles. It's awful. It's brilliant. It feels like she's finally won the lottery. Not that she would need to. She's still swimming in money. Ava manages to make her feel her emotions more deeply, too. Which feels strange at first. Different. Deborah's not used to being so introspective. But soon, she realizes that it's great. It allows her to be freer. Feel more connected to herself. Understand herself. Not that she'd ever admit it, especially not to Ava. But the essence of it all? It's that Ava makes her funnier. And funnier, to her, has always meant better. It's why she had been so devastated about Frank all those years before. Because in him, she had found someone to make her better. And then he had been taken away. Now, though, now she has something she knows will be forever. However long forever is, Ava is going to be by her side. The truth, the simple, simple truth, is that Ava Daniels is perfect for her. She was made for her, and she is perfect. So much more perfect, so much more than she could have ever imagined. Deborah won't tell her that, of course. The little shit would only let it get to her head. And God knows she doesn't need any more ego boosts. She'd probably end up looking at Deborah with that smug fucking smile on her face even more often. That goddamn smirk which, already, Deborah wants to roll her eyes at every time she sees it. A smirk which she finds really fucking endearing, if she's honest with herself. Which, again, she is these days, thanks to Ava. So no, Ava doesn't have to know. Or, well, that is, Deborah doesn't have to say it. Instead, she lets her know in other ways. She traces Ava's skin with her tongue to let her know how much she loves her. Whenever she does, it feels like an electric current is running through her. It sets her nerve endings ablaze, a sensation unlike anything she's ever experienced before. She loves her with her fingers to express how grateful she is, for how much Ava has done for her, for having helped her accept herself and her past and her future. She kisses her deeply and sensually to tell her, "You are the most perfect being in the world, and I never want to lose you." And when she does, when she kisses her, Deborah swears that there are fireworks going off. Their fire crackles between them, and their skin is on fire. It works, this love language of theirs. It works so, so, so well. Ava is so good to her that it's almost as if nothing had ever existed before her. It's just them now, Deborah and Ava. Nothing else is of importance. Together, they're invincible. The dream team of comedy while they're on stage, the perfect, most compatible couple in the world off stage. It's pretty amazing, actually, having a soulmate. What's more, Deborah knows, without a doubt, is that Ava is the best soulmate she could have asked for. And she never even did. The end.